You're now plugged in to the Delphi podcast.
Hi, everyone. Jose here, one of the co-founders at Delphi. Very excited to be co-hosting an episode of the Delphi podcast. And today we have a star-studded cast. We've got Cindy, the co-founder of Drift Protocol, which just announced its token generation event. So we'll be getting into Drift and all that. We have Arthur Hayes, co-founder of BitMEX and now of Maelstrom, and Kyle Samani, who's, I think, co-founder and managing partner at Multicoin. So we're going to be chatting, getting into Drift, but also just like DeFi and markets more generally. So it should be a really good chat. To kick it off, could you guys give us an intro to your, maybe Cindy to start, like your backgrounds, how you ended up building Drift and what the vision was for it. And then maybe afterwards, Arthur and Kyle, you guys can just give a brief intro and also how you came across Drift and why you were excited to invest.
For sure. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for having us today. It's going to be super exciting. I fell into crypto in 2017, starting off as a trader. I was actually living in Korea at the time, so was arbitraging the kimchi premium back in the day. And then started a trading fund that was primarily doing arbitrage and basis strategies across perps at the time. And around 2020, fell into the DeFi rabbit hole, discovered this vast world of lending protocols, AMMs, and had a big realization that there was something fundamentally wrong with the fact that a majority of the biggest crypto derivatives are still centralized at the time. So when I came across Solana in 21, I realized that Solana had kind of the perfect ingredients for infrastructure and for building a super performant, fast exchange on chain. So that was the start of Drift. We started in 2021, launched towards November, and grew to be the biggest PropDex on Solana today.
Very cool. Arthur, Kyle, you guys want to do quick intros and how you came across Drift?
Hey, everyone. Kyle here, co-founder of Multicoin. Our team, Spencer and our team, got together, Cindy and David and the Drift team a couple of years ago. We have been thinking a lot about DeFi derivatives for a long time. I believe we actually wrote a blog post called like building decentralized BitMEX back in like 2020. so something we've been thinking about for quite some time. Our core thesis for Solana was the same as Anatoly's, which was NASDAQ on chain. And when Cindy and David came to us in 2021, as they were getting started, or maybe it was early 22, we were pretty excited about the opportunity to build a full fledged, basically decentralized BitMEX on chain, leveraging the speed and parallelism of Solana. Fast forward a couple of years, and Drift is, I think, today the leading derivatives DEX on Solana, and one of the leading derivatives DEXs in the world. So, come a long way.
Hi, everyone. Arthur here, co-founder of the pre-Drift BitMEX, and CIO of my family office, Maelstrom. I got brought the deal in one of our catch-ups with Akshat, who runs the investment portfolio. I'm not exactly sure how he met Cindy and the team, but as always, when he presented to me another perp dex, I was like, why is this one special? And, you know, when I read the memo that him and his team prepared, I was like, okay, these guys seem like they're doing something really cool here. And so as I dug in more, I was very excited that I think these guys can take the top spot from DYDX in terms of volume and like fucking crush everybody. So super pumped.
Nice. And so throughout your time in crypto, you've been involved both as investors and builders in CeFi and DeFi. Arthur, obviously you co-founded BitMEX, which, you know, invented the perp. And, you know, Kyle, you guys were early to BNB and others. And so given this, I'm curious, like, what do you think, like, what's your thesis for DeFi? Like, is it just going to take over CeFi, like recreate CeFi in a permissionless and censorship resistant way? Is it going to enable like new things? How do you see the opportunity and for DeFi versus CeFi?
Paint the vision.
Yeah, for sure.
For all your followers.
Yeah, our vision for, you know, why DeFi needs to exist and why not just build another centralized exchange is that, one, we believe that censorship resistance is super important as we go into a world where regulatory clarity is not there for derivatives exchanges, and it becomes increasingly difficult for anyone to make a trade without, you know, KYCing themselves and having to like prove that they exist in the real world. We wanted to build infrastructure and rails to enable anyone to trade permissionlessly in any form without needing to sign themselves up and essentially have to prove that it exists. So censure resistance is a huge one. No one should be told what they can trade and what they cannot trade. And outside of that, access to derivatives and access to financial markets is still largely unavailable to most people living outside of the most developed countries in the world. So a big thesis for ourselves, I'm from Malaysia, so I didn't have access to a lot of financial instruments in this country. So a big part of it was just essentially bringing it to a wider audience. And of course, the infrastructure is not 100% there today to bring in the wider masses outside of crypto Twitter onto a crypto DEX today. But I believe that's going to change. And I think in 5 years, people should be onboarding to Drift exchange their fiat for crypto versus going through a centralized exchange today.
Arthur, you built a big CeFi exchange. I figure you've got some good thoughts on CeFi.
Yeah, so I think the problem with CeFi exchanges from a more microstructure perspective is our biggest clients are the large trading firms that most everyone is very familiar with. And these firms make up, 70, 80% of flow on most exchanges. And you get into the situation where you have to adjust your policies to match these clients because they're the ones paying you all the money. And you neglect the retail trader who is the life and blood of any market. And you develop, latency venues where someone with the fastest IT infrastructure is the best trader, which isn't really price discovery. And obviously we've seen that it's in the TradFi markets and how things have developed. It's coming to crypto in terms of, we're getting questioned by clients on latency, act to tick, how many millis are you? And the average retail person is sitting there just getting smoked by these guys. And what they want is native trading that appeals to them, products that make sense to them, meet the customer where they are in terms of their sophistication and how they want to trade. And I think that's what's amazing with DeFi is you have all these different types of people who are saying, hey, I would like to trade in this way. Let me build a product for this particular very niche part of the market. And over time, we've built things like Uniswap, and now we've gotten into the derivative space. And so I believe that the future is going to be on-chain. And as we get more performant L1s, or there's upgrades to L1s and L2s and all that kind of stuff, we enable things like Drift. And they're going to make the trading experience very retail focused, very personalized, very easy for people who don't understand finance to all of a sudden do leverage trading or put on a basis trade or do all these different things that people have been doing in TradFi and on large CeFi exchanges for decades and 10 years in crypto. So I see this as a refocus to the core of what we are, which is a bunch of Muppets around the world who want to trade stuff and not just large trading firms.
I'll take a different point on what I kind of think DeFi represents. The core things on blockchains that we all interact with are called smart contracts. If you think about it, like derivatives as they operate on Wall Street are all bespoke contracts. Some of them are more standardized than others. Obviously, if you trade on CME, for example, like those contracts are fairly standardized. But even getting to the point where you can trade contracts on CME is actually fairly difficult in terms of onboarding with an FCM and all the collateral requirements and agreements and ISDAs and all this shit. It's pretty complicated. If you obviously go more bespoke, those derivatives contracts become more and more bespoke and harder to interact with and deal with. And it's basically impossible for retail to interact with CME, let alone anything even further long tail than just, deliverable forwards. What I love about crypto is anyone can write a smart contract, and now you enable anyone to participate in any arbitrary derivative contract. And you can see good examples of this on chain today. Kind of the first version of this really was like Yearn Finance, I think, of like a yield aggregator of saying, look, there's these different yield sources and you can just get the best rate at all times. But now if you look at even some of the really cool stuff the Drift team is doing, You've got, you know, looping Supersoul stuff. You've got circuit vaults. You've got all of these really cool instruments of ways, your basis trades and whatever that retail can access basically by going to a website and clicking a button. And like it wasn't possible to access these kinds of yield opportunities or put on these kinds of trades previously. And so DeFi really is democratizing access to more robust finance.
That's awesome. Let's get into Drift then. So Cindy, Drift started off, as far as I remember, as a VAMM back in 2021. You've built a lot of stuff since then, and you've pretty much got one of the most complete, I think, product offerings in the derivatives space. I'd love to hear like a bit of the history, like what you went through and how and why you kind of ended up where you ended up.
Yeah. So V1, which was launched in 2021 at the first Breakpoint, was a simple virtual AMM. So USDC collateral, no bells and whistles, really. One of the simplest kind of MVPs to push on the market. The benefit with virtual AMM is that it's one of the easiest markets to bootstrap. You don't need any collateral to bootstrap, and you can pretty much list markets very quickly. So we wanted to test the thesis that there was demand to trade these perp contracts on chain with the simplest products possible. So VMM was the first iteration of the product. But we knew that ultimately we needed to build something more robust with cross collateral, cross margin to attract larger traders, as well as an order book. So V2, which was launched ironically a year later on the day of FTX's collapse, included all of these features. So we realized that we knew as traders in the past that cross margin and cross collateral was one of the most requested features on chain, and no other perp DEX had actually built out cross collateral. How we did it was embedding a borrowland protocol underneath the hood of the perp exchange, which included multiple liquidity mechanisms. So we had an order book for more sophisticated traders. We still had a virtual AMM that was collateralized for people who wanted to, you know, get in and out of more meme coin like markets, and a RFQ like mechanism for faster fills. But with the cross collateral backend, what this fundamentally enabled is that you can now use any asset on chain to margin for your perp positions. And this unlocks a lot of new use cases where you can now trade any asset on chain and not have to sell your position in order to go into a perp position. So you can see how you can create delta neutral positions using SOL or even Jito SOL as collateral, and short a SOL perp to create something like a delta neutral stablecoin. And this is only enabled on our platform today. So we have built a lot of things that are on top of that, like lending market, market making vaults. And so this kind of goes into the vision of how can we create the top of funnel for all DeFi users today and keep them from every cycle of usage, everything from lending, which is more like a savings product or treasury management product, all the way to high frequency trading. So we believe that having that all under the same umbrella is the best experience for users.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm definitely a cross margin / cross collateral maxi. I think it's like exchanges sort of, you see them make money on the majors, but I feel like they really win customers on the long tail. And you kind of saw it with like Poloniex and then Binance and then FTX, right? Going longer and longer tail, with FTX being like, okay, not only can you ape random shitcoins on here, you can also like use them as collateral tape other shitcoins with, right?
And then they blew up.
Yeah. Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit, like Gattuso says. But yeah, I think that it's definitely like where things are headed. And I think a bunch of people have moved there since. What's next? Like, what do you see as the next frontier for Drift?
Yeah, I think a big next step for us is how can we bring more assets on chain? How can we bridge this on chain casino that we've built with more of an institutionalization play? And how can we improve and increase our distribution funnel? So one of the big things is with RWAs, if you think about tokenizing T-bills or tokenizing assets like Lock Soul on chain, that unlocks a whole new ground for users able to use different types of real assets as collateral on chain. And we think that in order for PerpDexes to grow beyond where they are now, just sort of you're restricted to just the on-chain space. I think that the biggest unlock is actually bringing in more collateral and financializing assets that are not currently on-chain. So that's a big direction that we're going in, as well as continuing to focus on.
Yeah, I know that both Arthur and Kyle have some potentially spicy takes on RWAs. So I'd be curious to let them jump in here with whatever thoughts you have on that space.
I mean, I've written about this pretty vocally. I think most of them, these projects are complete horseshit. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't trade them and Drift shouldn't make fees, like fucking go nuts. But from, you know, an end user's perspective or an investor in some of these protocols, I question whether they understand how interest rates actually work or have a view on, you know, why would I invest in a T-bill platform? What if Powell drops a rate to zero tomorrow? You have no yield, therefore you have no product. So I think a lot of these things are great in the moment and they make sense in sort of a particular macro environment. But if things change, then, you know, they're destined for the dustbin. But who cares? I mean, if you want to trade it on Drift, go long, go short. Just pay his fees. I mean, I love it.
I generally, most things that call themselves RWAs are not super interesting. They're interesting to the extent of like, hey, maybe you can get access to an asset you couldn't get before, which is, you know, okay. Yield bearing stable coins being kind of the largest and most obvious example. But, you know, like there's an opportunity to have Apple on chain and Google on chain and whatever else, Tesla and stuff. There are a lot of people who can't access those assets in jurisdictions they live in. And, you know, I do think a lot of those people over time will access those assets on chain. We don't yet have most, you know, US securities accessible on chain, but I think that's going to change in the next year or two. Overall, it's great that it's happening. It's coming on chain. I don't know how to profit from the existence of Tesla on chain other than to invest in Drift. So I'm an investor in Drift.
There we go.
Yeah, I kind of see it the same way. So do you see a world where people will just be able to trade any asset on chain, like commodities, stocks, sort of indexes, everything, and like a cross-margin account with your tokens and stuff as well? And do you think that those trading volumes will be significant, or will it always be kind of, will tokens always be the main thing on chain?
That's an interesting question. And yeah, I mean, that's a dream. Obviously, legal is going to say something in the background, but ultimately, you know, having these assets be able to trade on a single account is the most unified user experience I can think of. And as for volumes, it's hard to say now, but TradFi volumes are still multiples of what crypto is. So being able to build a Robinhood on-chain actually unlocks a lot of non-crypto retail that I think is even bigger subset of users than crypto right now.
Fair. And I know you're working on some other stuff, Cindy. You want to talk about some of like the meme coin derivatives and some of your other initiatives you've got going?
Yeah. Meme coin derivatives are a big one, especially with the launch of governance. Now anyone can list a market through a governance vote. So what this means is it opens up things that people weren't able to trade before. For instance, WIF and Bonk are some of our biggest markets, and we are excited to continue going that in this direction of allowing our community to vote for whatever they want to trade. So that's permissionlessness is a big direction that we're going into. And yeah, I'm curious if you guys have any takes on trading meme coins versus more serious assets too.
I fucking love meme coins. It's like, I mean, look at how the whole like Western investment world is on fire now because what's his face, Rory and Kitty came back and ignited a fire under the shorts of GME or GameStop and AMC, and brokers are down, shenanigans are being played in the TradFi world. So I love meme coins. I think it's a big fuck you to this whole ridiculous financial system that we have. So let's go, more of them. Wear the fucking hat.
Hat stays on. Yeah, generally in agreement. Like, look, people, if they want to drink, they can drink. If they want to go to the casino in Vegas and put it all on black, they can put it all on black. Like, they like a picture of a dog with a hat, you know, like, go for it. The older I get, the more I learn about the world, the more I kind of, I'm just like, cool, man, do your thing, have fun. Like, and meme coins perfectly capture that with like minimal collateral damage. Like obviously it's a financial market, inherently there's risk, but like what's the collateral damage out of meme coins?
even like the theoretical risk of it, I don't really know. So big supporter of it.
Yeah, I guess that's a question. How do you, speaking of collateral damage, how do you make the derivative, like these meme coin derivative markets, safe? I guess it's like some kind of isolated collateral thing that you have.
Yeah, that's right. With the non-major markets, we have isolated insurance funds for each of them. So a bankruptcy in a meme coin market will not draw from the main insurance fund of the protocol. Well, it can only draw on its own insurance fund, which is built from its own fees. So this isolated model makes it really cool for us to be able to list, you know, unlimited markets without being able to account for how risky an asset actually is. Obviously, Sol, BTC, and ETH, we consider primary assets here, and would have a higher collateral weighting than meme coins. But with, let's say, 10% collateral weighting, you could make it work for a meme coin versus 100% for USDC.
Makes sense. And yeah, are there any, do you want to tease? I've heard rumors of Drift V3. Is there anything you can kind of tease there? Or?
Yeah, still very early stages, but I think one of the core things about being on a derivatives exchange and the trade-off on chain is still speed. And we want to create an experience where the user still gets the fastest confirmations possible compared to a centralized exchange. I think Solana today is still comparably slower than a centralized exchange. So we can keep the asset availability on the L1, but move execution to an environment where you can create faster transactions for users that are faster than the L1. You get the benefits of decentralization and composability while still having, you know, centralized exchange speed. So still very early in the game, but we're excited to share this, as I think speed is one of the most important things for HFT traders.
Okay, so it'd be like off-chain order matching and then on-chain settlement, kind of like, I guess, DYDX or something else?
We would still keep a lot of it on-chain, but for instance, okay, right now how our order book works is it's a keeper network that functions as almost like a layer on top of the L1. But it's a decentralized network of keepers that post their order back on-chain. So it could be a model where the keepers are posting it to, let's say, a sidechain on Solana, and that sidechain operates at a much faster block time than L1, and then rolls it back down in a batch transaction. So
that's interesting. And that leads into another question I had, which is, a lot of, first of all, I'm curious who you consider your biggest competitors, I guess, in DeFi specifically. And then, yeah, maybe we can start with that. Like, who do you see as your biggest competitors? Who do you think is doing like a really good job?
Yeah, I think Hyperliquid and DYDX are two of the bigger competitors in the space. Both of them, yeah, obviously have their own app chain. We've opted to go down the Solana L1 route and stay on an L1 due to the fact that, you know, we believe having composability and building a CME for assets within an L1 is much better trade-off than having your own isolated app chain. And I know Kyle shares strong views on this as well. But yeah, we believe that to be one of our core advantages. We have, you know, over 300 million TVL today as a result of kind of the shared asset layer with the rest of Solana.
Yeah, do you want to add anything to that, Kyle? Or I'm curious, yeah, what your thoughts are on the app chain versus building on a monolith for Perp Dex specifically. Because yeah, as you mentioned, Cindy, like two of your biggest competitors, I guess, both opted for this app chain architecture, right? Yeah,
you know, there's theoretical gains you can get by going to an app chain specifically in the context of a derivatives DEX. I'm not sure how much those gains will hold up in practice in a post-Firedancer world, but at least for now, there's some gains you can have there. However, it's not clear to me those gains are worth it. The primary thing you seem to trade off is what I guess you can call composability, but what I'll kind of more broadly call like the standards problem. One thing that I think people underappreciate about all of the L2s and all of the app chains and all of the wallets and all the stuff is like, it's just confusing. Not all of the wallets support all of the assets. Not all of the wallets support all of the chains. Users don't remember where they're, I mean, look, I run a fund for a living, and like in my PA on chain, I like forget where I have assets and I have to like go open up five different wallets to like, be, oh yeah, I have assets over there and, you know, not over there or whatever. And so the more there's like real mental headache and burden that comes with these things. And like, it's even more painful when it's like the asset is on this address, this private public key pair, but it's on a different asset ledger. So like on another app chain and the wallet's not showing it when you open it up. So I think people really underappreciate all of the kind of mental friction that comes with all of this stuff. And then the, like, users really appreciate the simplicity of it. I mean, DeFi summer in 2020 was magical because everything was one wallet, was basically your MetaMask. And there was one asset ledger, which was ETH-L1. And everything just worked magically. And that's basically gone away, excluding Solana. Solana is really the only place where you still maintain that simplicity of ease of use. So I think there's real value there for people. It's hard to quantify, but it's real. The other obviously key element here is ability to issue assets and then incorporate new assets trivially. Trading on a DEX, like you issue a meme coin, it's got liquidity on an AMM immediately. You can access it from whether it's the Drift UI or the Phantom UI or the Jupiter UI or DFlow or whatever. All of these things, it just works. And so you can tap into that liquidity. You can have derivatives available quickly because of that and know that you have an underlying spot market. So like it really does improve the product experience for long tail assets to have everything live on one asset ledger instead of breaking these asset ledgers up. To the best of my knowledge, also, you know, DYDX doesn't only support USDC collateral, which is like a real limiting factor because a ton of people want to use other collateral, not just like Bonk collateral, but like Sol collateral or ETH collateral or Bitcoin collateral or, you know, whatever else. So there's a tremendous amount of value in supporting alternative forms of collateral.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I think the costs of operating an app chain are, like you said, it's just there's a lot of UX frictions between the wallets and RPCs and like bridging assets in and all this stuff that you just don't have. And the benefits of it have to sort of be big enough to justify that, plus the hassle of just operating your own infrastructure. And yeah, I agree so far. It's been theoretical, but one of the main reasons people talk about app chains being interesting and like DYDX did this is being able to more granularly control MEV, right? And potentially internalize MEV. And I know Arthur, you kind of talked about it with centralized exchanges, right? Like they're basically like the business model is these big trading firms like MEVing or front running users. And to some extent, like also Kyle, you mentioned it as like the main business model of L1s, right? Being MEV actually. And so how does Drift like internalize MEV or like capture some of this value from MEV, given that it's building on Solana? And like, do you think being able to control that as DYDX does by this like social consensus of the validators is valuable?
I guess I'll start here if Cindy and Arthur don't have strong opinions. Applications can capture a lot of their own MEV back to their own tokens without controlling consensus. I'll walk through two examples that are relevant for Drift. One is liquidations. The other is just general trading. With liquidations, today you offer some bounty for someone to come and if an account can be liquidated or partially liquidated, you offer an incentive for them to do so. But obviously part of that incentive fee can go back to Drift itself. If you control the contract where the collateral is held and you are releasing that collateral for whatever reason, then you can release X percentage of that collateral back to, you know, the Drift DAO or whatever. Fairly trivial to implement that kind of logic. There's a lot of considerations you'd want to have in terms of the gradients in these things. And I can't say I'm an expert in liquidation design, but like it's fairly true. I mean, if you're paying a fee to the guy who's liquidating, then obviously you can pay a fee to Drift, right? That by definition is doable. In the context of just general trading MEV and like either sex DEX arbitrage or DEX DEX arbitrage, I contest the notion that like it is Drift's MEV to be had. If the price on Binance is different than the price on Drift, that doesn't mean that Drift warrants getting MEV. Like that just means that like the prices are different between two venues. And so the person who actually is most entitled to that is the arbitrager, because you actually have to capture that spread either by doing some sort of statistical analysis of like latency and probabilities of landing your trade on Binance and Drift, or even if it's a DEX arbitrage and you can execute atomically on chain, like you then you have to be the fastest to get to the validator and get the block conclusion, which again, like, is a very non-trivial thing to do on a 10 millisecond time horizon with rotating leaders around the world. So to me, the correct recipient of that MEV is the arbitrager, because like you have to have the infrastructure in place to capture that, which is pretty difficult.
Yeah, fair. I agree in the context of SexDex arbitrage for sure. Do you have any thoughts on this, Cindy or Arthur? And Arthur, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on Solana generally. I've been following kind of your journey from buying to dumping to like, yeah, I'm curious if you're where you're feeling on Solana. I know you're I genuinely would classify you as more on the ETH camp, but yeah, I'm curious your general take on it.
Sure, let Cindy go first and talk about the important things.
Okay.
I'll talk about the boring stuff first. I think to summarize, as a DEX and an L1, you know, we pay tremendous amounts of transaction fees, obviously less on Solana than we would on Ethereum. But the brunt of it actually falls on our market makers. Market makers have to like fully optimize their transactions in order to maximize the chance of self-landing. And sometimes this means paying large amounts of priority fees or to avoid MEV going directly, let's say, to a Jito bundle. And I think one of the big things about building and having some of this flow go through a perp DEX versus an app chain is allowing is the trade-off of people trying to optimize transactions on an L1 versus centralizing a lot of that. So if you had your own order book, you wouldn't need to deal with a lot of the gas fees. But you know, in our case, we think that allowing the underlying L1 and the innovations to flourish so that we don't have to focus 100% of our time on infrastructure is a necessary trade-off for where we're at today.
Yeah, on the Solana stuff, so obviously I've been, you know, quite vocal of my opinions, both good and bad, as the market does this. I'm a trader. I buy it. I sell it. I think Solana is the high beta, you know, L1 of this cycle where ETH was in previous cycles. And so I'll buy it and I'll sell it depending on how I think the market's trading. Another question is, you've shat on Solana. How can you be an advisor, an investor in Drift, given that they're on Solana? And I think people need to separate sort of, yes, Drift is on Solana, but that's not why we're involved with them. I think that they're actually building a very comprehensive offering that can become number one across any chain. I don't give a fuck if you're number one on Solana. That doesn't make me money. You need to be number fucking one against everyone. And so if that means you're on Solana, great. If that means you're going to move to some other L1, don't give a fuck, right? It doesn't matter to me. I just care that you're able to offer the trading experience, bring in the customers, give them liquidity at a good price and give them the features that they want. And so obviously that right now they're doing that on Solana, good for them. But I think the Drift team will do whatever they need to do to get that number one spot. And that is the goal, in my opinion.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I also had a question in terms of product, like have you thought about stablecoins? Because it seems to me, you know, the kind of top three stablecoins have all been built around exchanges, right? Like, you know, Tether was built around Bitfinex originally. USDC was kind of built around Coinbase. And obviously, like, BUSD, before they got cucked by the government, was built around Binance. And you've got, like, there's a reason for that, right? Exchanges are, like, the most capital-efficient place to keep your capital. So it's, like, makes a lot of sense to mint a stablecoin against that. And also, you can kind of force user acquisition, right, by just, like, creating pairs and like, funneling people to them. And one thesis we've had internally is just that the leading sort of DEX will eventually be in the best position to issue like the winning decentralized stablecoin kind of thing. And have you thought about this? And like, what do you guys, what do you all think about this?
Yeah, we haven't thought too deeply about launching a stablecoin, but I think you're right with the advantages of having native collateralization and native crypto DEX is that you can essentially build a stablecoin that is either a is either an index of other stablecoins that are collateral on the platform, or come as a sort of more synthetic style where you're using funding rates as a source of yield for stablecoins such as Athena. And I think there's a circular element to that. Like when you kind of are stablecoins, are funding rates on your own platform and issue that as collateral, there could be some effects where you're overly reliant on the yield that feeds the stablecoin and the yield that drives the exchange. So we haven't thought too much about how we can do that without the centralization risk. But I agree. I think it's a big and profitable play in the long run. When you know we sort of hit that $1 billion TVL mark, I think that's something that we can think about.
Yeah, have you guys thought about this? I know you both have investments in the stablecoin space. Do you think like a DEX will? Yeah,
I think the liquidity and the open interest needs to become much larger for mm-hmm. a stablecoin like Athena, which is essentially just a package basis trade or a synthetic dollar, to use that as a source of their yield. And obviously it'll be an aggregate of the major DEXs because you don't want to have concentration risk. So I hope that we get to that point where, you know, maybe Athena ditches all the sexes and goes full DEX, or there's another competitor that is purely DEX. That would be great because that is full in the vision of we don't have counterparty risk against centralized entities. I just don't think that the liquidity is there yet. And hopefully, you know, Drift and others can bring that forward as quickly as possible.
Yeah, we actually invested in a team trying to do a decentralized version of Athena. It's called UXD Protocol. We invested two and a half years ago. It was just way too early. The derivatives DEXs, the DeFi derivatives DEXs were just not ready. They are certainly much closer today, but probably still a little early for that product to exist on a standalone basis. The opportunity for Athena certainly is to kind of start CeFi, add DeFi, and then maybe one day turn off CeFi. We'll see if they ever get there. But smart move from Athena to start where the liquidity is before. UXD was just way ahead of its time.
Yeah, for sure. I guess the opportunity more so I was thinking was kind of like a Go style stablecoin. If you know the Aave's Go, built on top of like Drift's. But I do agree, like volumes and OI need to increase a lot before that makes sense. But sort of like being able to mint a stablecoin against, you know, whatever your balance is on Drift, you know, like your overall like account on Drift kind of thing, I feel like would be like an interesting design for the winning DEX to explore. But yeah, you all talked about like DeFi, how it needs to get bigger for a lot of these things to make sense. And I guess, what do you think needs to happen for DeFi to grow? Because DEX versus centralized exchange market share kind of peaked in 2023, right? And it's been declining a bit since. I believe we're at like 8% for spot and 1% for derivatives of like DEX versus centralized exchange. And we were about double that or so in 2023. So, you know, it's been declining since. Why do you think DEXs still represent such a, I guess, relatively small percentage of trading volume? And what needs to happen for this to change?
Yeah, actually, I have some well-formed thoughts here. I think the biggest thing is fragmentation across ecosystems. If you want to trade across Cosmos and Ethereum and Solana and Aptos and whatever else, I mean, centralized exchanges, without question, provide the best experience because you can do all of that in one place. And there's a lot of value for users in that. this is why we invested in Drift and are so bullish Solana, is because, yeah, look, Solana is obviously never going to encompass all of the Ethereum based assets or Cosmos based assets, but we do think it can become a like its own real ecosystem of stuff where it's like, okay, there's enough interesting stuff here that people want to keep assets here and trade here. I think that's the biggest part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the trading experience generally is too difficult for most people, unless there's a very specific reason why they need to use a DEX. So it's a particular meme coin, it's an asset, it's a trading style that's not allowed or not offered on the sexes. And so I think that's one area where Drift and others can be, you know, very combative with sexes. Everything that they all shy away from, y'all need to be moving towards. Because if there's if you want to gain the users and you want to hook them into your ecosystem, you need to offer them something different that they can't get at the incumbent. You don't beat the incumbent playing the incumbent's game. And so whether that's usability, whether that's, you know, one-click trading or integration into different pools of crypto capital, whatever that is, you could move faster. Your smaller teams, more dedicated to offering retail a good experience. And I think that's where you go. And it's just patience, right? We've been doing this, I know, for real for only less than 4 years. I think it's a bit premature to say, well, why haven't we eclipsed the SEX ecosystem in 4 years when, you know, we listed all these different issues of like app chains versus monolithic versus parallelized versus like, if I'm a fucking retail trader, I don't know what the fuck any of us just said. It's just, I just want to trade. Just make it easy. Like offer it in my language. And I think if you do that, then all this other stuff that we talk about goes on in the background, and then DeFi sort of rises to where it should be.
Yeah, the also another thing to talk about is how DeFi protocols have utilized airdrops so far from a retroactive perspective. And I think it's pretty underutilized right now from a user acquisition perspective, because you're essentially taking, you know, 10-15% of your supply and airdropping into to retroactive users versus thinking about using tokens to, you know, attract people coming outside of crypto. The marginal cost of user acquisition using airdrops is pretty high today. But if you could even think about airdropping to users in regions that have never touched crypto or have never touched a CryptoBex before, I think that you could create new growth flywheels that don't exist today with how DeFi protocols are thinking about it. So kind of bridging what crypto Twitter sees today with the rest of the world, I think taking inspiration from that is something that is untapped and I think can lead to a lot of growth of real organic users.
That's interesting. Speaking of airdrops, do you want to kind of quickly touch base on your TGE and give people a TLDR and what they need to know, how they can get involved, this kind of thing?
Super excited to announce our TGE is going to be on May 16th. We've been working towards this moment for a couple of years now. And the launch of governance means that now anyone can, you know, own and be a part of the Drift exchange and vote on the future of the protocol. So what's happening on May 16th is a pretty interesting claim mechanism that we've inbuilt to the airdrop. 12% will be airdropped, but within the first 6 hours to avoid network congestion and to make the airdrop as smooth as possible. If you wait, basically we claim at the start of the 6 hours, you only get a percentage of your airdrop. But if you wait until the end, you get the full amount. So what this enables is you have this sort of rewarding patient holders and effects of the airdrop. And that philosophy has been pretty consistent in how we've designed the airdrop to reward long-term users, not sybils, and to reward the people who've been consistently using the protocol. One of the major things that we reward is actually how many times and how many unique times have you interacted or taken a position. How many times have you gotten liquidated? So, you know, I think this is actually the most effective way of telling sybils apart, because no one intentionally ever gets liquidated. So, yeah, we're very excited about this. Actually, yeah, just to feel something, right, Arthur? yeah, so excited for the claims to go out in just 2 days now.
Very cool. Yeah, excited for that as well. I'm curious, like, this is probably the last more like DeFi question before I'd like to get some of your like market thoughts before we head off. But with DeFi, it's kind of been a lagging, like, hated sector for a few years now, right? And a bunch of people have claimed that DeFi is kind of like solved. There's no innovation left. You know, it's just like optimizations from here. To what extent do you guys agree with this? Do you think we've discovered most of the major primitives that we were going to discover, and now it's just like optimizations plus go to market? Or, you know, is it a case where people are just not being imaginative enough and we're going to have like some new big invention that kind of changes everything?
I don't think it was incumbent upon crypto people to invent financial contracts. People have been trading stuff for 1,000 years or so. And so, like, there is a reason why commodity markets fall the way they have, and forwards contracts emerge from there, you know, as hedging. And
I don't fully appreciate the history of options and why those emerged or how they emerged, but there's obviously some path-dependent history there. Crypto has not really invented a new financial contract. The probably thing crypto has most popularized that was substantially less popular previously was perp contracts. And obviously Arthur and the BitMEX guys kind of led the charge there. And they are just like a better way to trade futures with leverage, especially for assets that you don't want delivery for. But yeah, generally it's like, if there's a you know, organization of risk to configure between two or more counterparties, that configuration of risk can and should exist outside of crypto markets. It should not be exclusive to crypto assets. And so generally I'm skeptical that like there's some new contract structure that is out there that we haven't discovered that crypto will unlock. I think the opportunity in crypto is access and composability for people.
Yeah, Arthur, Cindy, you got a take on this?
I think I agree with Kyle. There's however many hundreds of thousands of people who are members of some of the, you know, traditional exchanges. Let's give it to 8 billion people over the internet and let's see what they create. Maybe we'll create something new. I don't know. But if all we did was allow anyone with an internet connection to be able to trade with anyone else across the world, I think we've done a very good service to humanity.
Yeah, I think echoing the thoughts as well, what's been really interesting is looking at the growth of open source and having open source developers built on top of each other. What's interesting to us is also that the biggest market makers in the platform are not institutions, but are individual people who sort of built trading bots and are trading on the platform. And what this tells us is that there's a big opportunity for real growth in ecosystem and real growth to come from, you know, developers who are coming in and able to build on open source technology, not just like large institutions and traders. So going down and continuing on the open source path rather than anything closed source is always a net benefit for any protocol.
This was awesome. I want to end with some general market thoughts. Maybe first of all, just like, where does everyone think we are? And everyone's favorite question, where are we in the cycle? Do we even still have cycles? Do we finally have the super cycle? Yeah, what do you guys think?
We absolutely do not have the Jupiter cycle. If you still believe that, then you can go join Sue and Kyle in bankruptcy, because you'll end up there at some point. I think that the cycle is just beginning. And we are at the beginnings of the collapse of the sovereign bond market globally, and that will take crypto to levels that no one can imagine right now. And so while I don't think that it's going to be a super cycle, I do think that it might be a little bit longer, a little bit more intense, but that just means that those who don't get off the train at the right time will be that much more butthurt when shit goes down 95% again. So we're still early. I don't think people like, you know, some of our other projects are like, I got to do this now because there's only 6 months left in the bull market. Well, if we've gotten to this far because you thought that, you know, governments are spending too much money, there's inflation, there's the cusp of global war, is that really going to solve itself in 6 months? I don't think so. So I think the things that got us here, these trends are longer term trends, and we are just at the beginning. And so I think the summer is going to be a bit quiet. But come September and October, when all the Muppets who run things around the world are back making more mistakes, crypto is there to take those mistakes and take prices higher.
Love to hear it.
Generally, I think there's a lot of room to run. I don't subscribe to super cycle theory. Leverage will build up. People will get greedy. Cycles therefore must exist because of short-term nature of greed and leverage. The big thing that's changed this cycle versus last cycle is the ETF. I generally think I have two strong conclusions from that. One is there will be a flow of capital that into crypto markets that previously could not access crypto markets. The first kind of 3 months, you know, January through March, there was a group of people who could not buy Bitcoin that knew they wanted to buy Bitcoin. And have now, those people have entered the market. And that pushed Bitcoin from, call it 40 to 70, 65 or whatever, something like that. Now there's all the people who don't know yet know they want to buy Bitcoin, but now they can. and now it is available to them in a way in which they can purchase it. That is not a homogenous group of people. Those people will enter the market at different points in time. Some of them will be later this year. Some of them will be in 3 years. Who knows? But I generally expect that capital to enter the market. I'm going to call it steady-ish over the next, 2 to 4 years. So that could mean the cycle ends up being longer. That's probably the best reason for the cycle to be longer than prior cycles. The flip side is, because for the first time we have this daily inflow outflow number on the ETF, which we've never had a headline indicator like that on a rolling 24-hour basis, that could increase vol, where it's like if everyone thinks the cycle is over because you can see the ETF outflows, that could actually further accelerate vol in both directions. And those two variables are somewhat counterbalancing. But those effects will be pronounced this market cycle than they didn't exist prior market cycle.
Cindy, you got a take on this? Or
to sell us that drift price prediction, fuck the rest of the market.
Yeah, I'm too deep in the tunnel vision to look super far in macro. But I mean, from our perspective, I think we're definitely in for a much bigger cycle this time versus what we've seen last. I mean, the 4 year cycle has been repeated over and over again as just a mantra, but given institutionalization and the mature, like apps being more mature today, I think you see less volatility, but over a long time horizon, and more volatility in super small caps and medium caps as well. So we should expect to see more trading there versus the largest caps today.
And yeah, relatedly to this, like this cycle, I feel like it's also been a pretty kind of overall depressing bull market for people, at least just seeing the vibes on like crypto Twitter and stuff. It seems like, I feel like it's most evident in the so-called like financial nihilism and the VC hate, or like tech coins, which is just anything that isn't like a meme coin. Like this dichotomy between the tech coins and the meme coins, and how like the sort of these tech coins, the game is rigged against retail, and so they got to go ape these meme coins instead. What are your thoughts on this generally? Like, is this, because in past cycles you kind of saw like all alts were just sort of like beta to Bitcoin and ETH to some extent. Obviously there were some big outperformers, but I think this cycle we're seeing a lot more dispersion. And I'm curious like how you think that bit's going to play out, as well as this financial nihilism meme coin thing.
I mean, that's just a lot of bad traders. Like, they probably got smoked because FTX took the whole market down because they were the biggest shit corner ever invented in crypto. And that left a big hole. It still has left a big hole. There's still a lot of capital that's been completely destroyed because they went along with all the Sam coins and whatnot. And once he was out of the market, then, it's hard to recover. So I just think that a lot of things, there's still a lot of hurt around. Like, there's a lot of capital that was lost in the last cycle. We still haven't recovered that. And so maybe your favorite coin hasn't gone up, two times as fast as Bitcoin has. And you're like, well, what the fuck? Like, every other cycle, I could have picked up a piece of dog shit and it would outperform Bitcoin. But this cycle, Bitcoin's outperforming. So it must be because some other variable out there. Or it's just that you had a very large trader who went bust, who was, the biggest shit coiner ever. And the market needs time to heal. I do think that altcoins, or specific altcoins, will outperform Bitcoin, ETH, Solana in this cycle. The good investors will be able to find those coins and ride those to the point at which they exit. The bad ones will continue bitching on crypto Twitter about, everybody else is responsible for why they're not making enough money and why they're taking the bus when the boy's taking a Lambo. So, I mean,
I have I think maybe a higher precision view of what Arthur just said. I think actually the meme coin stuff produces more headlines than it is like real. Volumes on meme coins versus volumes on the majors it's a rounding error. It's like sub 1%. It's produced a lot of headlines because it's like funny and weird and like, I don't know what's with and bonk and, like Bowden and stuff. But as a percentage of like what's happening in the market on an absolute basis, it's not particularly large. It's just novel and confusing to a lot of people. Like DeFi, when it came out, was like cool. And if you understood finance, like you could understand DeFi. And when NFTs came out, like you could be like, look, I understand art and collecting. Meme coins, I think like people have struggled because it feels more arbitrary. But it's actually not super important to the market. I think the biggest reason that this cycle has felt different on Twitter specifically is ETH. Most people who own Bitcoin aren't talking about Bitcoin on Twitter because, quite frankly, there's been nothing to talk about. The whole point of Bitcoin has been that it sits there and does nothing. And, you know, like there's these L2s are coming now. So like, we'll see. Disclosure, we're investors in a couple of them, but like, yeah, historically there just wasn't anything to talk about. And so those people aren't active on social media. The ETH people have been the primarily ones active on social media because obviously there was stuff to talk about. And ETH has really underperformed, both Bitcoin and Solana. And I think that's actually the reason why like there's a noted sentiment change on Twitter, is because effectively everyone on Twitter is a, you know, large ETH bag holder, not everyone, but, you know, substantial majority. And so I think that's actually what's causing it. And I think there's like a real, and the reason ETH is underperforming, I think is because quite frankly, Solana, like a lot of people are realizing like, hey, this seems like a better path. Certainly risk adjusted relative given market cap deltas. A lot of people are coming to that conclusion. So I don't think it's a coincidence that these two things are directly correlated.
Yeah, that's awesome. I agree with both of you. Do you think there's a chance, like there's a lot of these high FTV launches with unlocks coming up in the next sort of, you know, well, 2 years realistically. Do you think this is going to be like an issue? Like it's going to be hard for a lot of these to absorb that selling pressure, and do you think that causes kind of a general alt, you know, bear market that has some kind of spillover effects? Or do you think it's just like the good names will survive, is the kind of what Arthur said, right? Like the good investors will find the good projects, invest in them when people are selling, and things will correct themselves.
I mean, yeah, again, if your project was pure hype and marketing and then unlock comes and you have no users and you basically just incentivize them with token airdrops, they did nothing for your community, then yeah, as the dumping happens, there's nobody there to believe in your project because there's nothing to believe in. So it's a problem. And I think it's very specific to the particular shitcoin that you're trading. So you have to understand what you're trading, understand the community, understand if they actually built anything real or it was just really slick marketing.
Generally agree with that. I think the other kind of challenge here is like, the length of time in which, you know, things vest. One of the things that people forget now that was extremely unique about Solana was the vesting schedule. All of the insider tokens vested on, I think it was January 7th of 2021, if I'm not mistaken. And so the chart of like the token release schedule was just like a vertical line on that date. And it was so FUDded because of that. And we were obviously large Solana holders from before the token launched. And so I loved it. It was great FUD. All press is good press. But the good thing about that is like once you pass January 7th, then there's nothing left to FUD. And I think it's very much like a rip the Band-Aid thing. And look, there's no way around the 1 year cliff, given the current state of affairs with the SEC and such. So you're going to have a 1 year cliff after you launch, but I'm generally in favor of teams going, instead of having these 2-3-4 year vesting schedules afterwards, rip the Band-Aid. And look, if retail freaks out ahead of time and your token goes down 80%, like great, just get it over with. Let the VC sell down 80% if that's what they want to do. And then let the market, you know, come back to normal functioning. Lockups are explicitly distorting the market price. Like that's one thing that isn't said, but it's like kind of obviously true. And I think it's important to understand that like if there's someone who wants to sell your token and they are not allowed to, then you are distorting the market price arbitrarily in the upwards direction. And like I think there's this structural, it's not like a person's fault. I mean, other than the kind of the SEC, but like there's no one person at fault here. It's just endemic to the nature of getting a token into the wild. We spent a lot of time thinking about this across our 200 plus portfolio companies, and we don't have a solution other than we just say, guys, rip the Band-Aid. And look, if all of your, like, I also think this is circular, right? Like, I think with all of these tokens, if these things were all 100% float on day one, I think the FTVs would be 10x lower than they are. And so I think the problem would kind of solve itself. With a lot of these tokens, if they were down 90% from their current prices, people wouldn't be complaining that these things feel overvalued. Some people still would, but like certainly that feeling would be substantially reduced. And also the VCs, then maybe they wouldn't want to sell if they were down 90%, which is great. Like, they should hold on. Like, and if the team thinks they're, you know, haven't made enough money, then they should hold on. Like, I really think that like this problem distorting the market is the problem.
Yeah. Is there not an issue there with teams being able to sell? Like, cause you know, if your founder, like if you rip off the Band-Aid and you know, your founder comes with it and now your founder is like fully out, it's not ideal. It feels like.
Yeah.
It depends on the product, right? If it's a bullshit product and everyone needs to get out as soon as they can, then yes. But if they fully believe in their product, then they're not going to sell. Like, how many shares, Brian Armstrong sold of Coinbase? Probably not. He still owns a fuck ton of the stock, right? Because he believes in the company, even if he sold a bit of it, even after he's unlocked, right? So it's still, I think it's one of those things. It depends on your belief in what you built.
I mean, I think if you're going to, you know, have less regulated financial markets, like there are new forms of risk that emerge around disclosure and these kinds of things. And like part of it's kind of underwriting the founder. And like, you got to be eyes wide open about those risks you're taking. And like, I think it's fine. If founders want to sell on day one, they can, and their reputation will probably be ruined. And like, okay, they can move on with their life. And if you're buying a token, then you got to be aware. And hey, look, if you don't know anything about the founder's background, then maybe don't put half your net worth into it, you know, like put 1% of your net worth. Like, it is risk and reward. If people want to go away, they can go away. It's, you know, again, creating explicit market distortion is, I'm not sure, a better solution, because all it does now is just create everyone complaining about the VCs and the lockups and like this, what we have now, which is the status quo. And I'm not convinced the status quo is any better than the alternative.
That makes sense. It would be funny to see everyone, the sort of gas wars to dump on the rip off the Band-Aid day between all the VCs. But it certainly worked for Solana.
There's one other very interesting thing that happens. It's very counterintuitive that happens when you do the rip the Band-Aid approach, which is you create a shelling point for the early holders to sell. With Solana, very famously, we bought out most of the Saft holders who wanted to sell because they were freaking out. And like the cliff created a motivation for them to go out of their way to sell before the cliff. And that then created an opportunity for anyone who was interested, such as us, to come in and buy. And so again, like this long drawn out thing where there's all this counterparty risk and are you going to deliver my tokens over the next 12 months? It's just hard to complete those transactions on a secondary basis. I can say this as someone who's bought a lot of those over the years. But if you have a shelling point of, look, the token goes, unlocks in a week, I'll transfer to you in a week. Like it's just a much easier transaction to complete for both sides.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Really appreciate everyone's time. This was super interesting. I don't know if Cindy, you want to say any last words or tell people anything, where they can follow you, anything like that before we wrap up.
Yeah, we're super active on Twitter at Drift Protocol and Cindy the LTT. Just follow for updates in the next couple of days on TG. Excited to see you on the other side.
Awesome. Thanks everyone very much for joining for the great discussion, and best of luck for the TGE.
Cindy, great work. Thank you, guys. Excited for the Drift token launch, and
go
onwards and upwards.
LFG.